Margaret of Angoulême, Queen of Navarre, _Louise of Savoy, her marriage with the Count of Angoulême, birth of her children Margaret and Francis, their father's early death, Louise and her children at Amboise, Margaret's studies and her brother's pastimes, marriage of Margaret with the Duke of Alençon, her estrangement from her husband, accession of Francis I. The Duke of Alençon at Marignano, Margaret's court at Alençon, her personal appearance, her interest in the Reformation and her connection with Clement Marot, lawsuit between Louise of Savoy and the Constable de Bourbon. In dealing with the life and work of Margaret of Angoulême, it is necessary at the outset to refer to the mother whose influence and companionship served so greatly to mold her daughter's career. Louise of Savoy, daughter of Count Philip of Bresse, subsequently Duke of Savoy, was born at La Pondaine in 1477. And upon the death of her mother, Margaret de Bourbon, she married Charles d'Orléans, Count of Angoulême, to whom she brought the slender dowry of 35,000 livres. She was then but 12 years old, her husband being some 20 years her senior. He had been banished from the French court for his participation in the insurrection of Brittany, and was living in straitened circumstances. Still, on either side the alliance was an honorable one. Louise belonged to a sovereign house, while the Count of Angoulême was a prince of the blood royal of France by virtue of his descent from King Charles V, his grandfather having been that monarch's second son, the notorious Duke Louis of Orleans, who was murdered in Paris in 1417 at the instigation of John the Bold of Burgundy. Louise, who, although barely noble, impatiently longed to become a mother, gave birth to her first child after 4 years of wedded life. "My daughter Margaret," she writes in the journal recording the principal events of her career, "was born in the year 1492, the 11th day of April, at 2 o'clock in the morning, that is to say, the 10th day, 14 hours and 10 minutes, counting after the manner of the astronomers. This auspicious event took place at the Château of Angoulême, then a formidable and stately pile, of which nowadays there only remains a couple of towers, built in the 14th and 15th centuries. Soon afterwards Cognac became the Count of Angoulême's favorite place of residence, and it was there that Louise gave birth, on September 12, 1494, to her second child, a son, who was christened Francis. Louise's desires were now satisfied, but her happiness did not long remain complete. On January 1, 1496, when she was but 18 years old, she lost her amiable and accomplished husband, and forthwith retiring to her château of Romorantin, she resolved to devote herself entirely to the education of her children. The Duke of Orleans, who, on the death of Charles VIII, in 1498, succeeded to the throne as Louis XII, was appointed their guardian, and in 1499 he invited them and their mother to the royal château of Amboise, where they remained for several years. The education of Francis, who had become heir presumptive to the throne, was conducted at Amboise by the Marshal de Guy, one of the king's favorites, whilst Margaret was entrusted to the care of a venerable lady, whom her panegyrist does not mention by name, but in whom he states all virtues were assembled. This lady took care to regulate not only the acts but also the language of the young princess, who was provided with a tutor in the person of Robert Toureau, Baron of Auzay, great archdeacon and abbot of St. Martin of Autun. This divine instructed her in Latin and French literature, and also taught her Spanish and Italian, in which languages Brantôme asserts that she became proficient. But albeit she knew how to speak good Spanish and good Italian, he says, she always made use of her mother tongue for matters of moment, though when it was necessary to join in jesting and gallant conversation she showed that she was acquainted with more than her daily bread. Such was Margaret's craving for knowledge that she even wished to obtain instruction in Hebrew, and Paul Paradis, surnamed Lacanas, a professor at the Royal College, gave her some lessons in it. Moreover, a rather obscure passage in the funeral oration which Sainte-Marthe devoted to her after her death, seemingly implies that she acquired from some of the most eminent men and flourishing the precepts of the philosophy of the ancients. The journal kept by Louise of Savoy does not impart much information as to the style of life which she and her children led in their new abode, the palatial château of Amboise, originally built by the Counts of Anjou, and fortified by Charles VII, with the most formidable towers in France. Numerous authorities state, however, that Margaret spent most of her time in study with her preceptors and in the devotional exercises which then had so large a place in the training of princesses. Still she was by no means indifferent to the pastimes in which her brother and his companions engaged. Gaston de Foix, the nephew of the king, William Gouffier, who became Admiral de Bonnivet, Philip Bryan, Sieur de Chabot, Fleuringe, the young adventurer, Charles de Bourbon, Count of Montpensier, and Anne de Montmorency, two future constables of France, surrounded the heir to the throne, with whom they practiced tennis, archery, and jousting, or played at soldiers pending the time when they were to wage war in earnest. Margaret was a frequent spectator of these pastimes, and took a keen interest in her brother's efforts whenever he was assailing or defending some miniature fortress or tilting at the ring. It would appear also that she was wont to play at chess with him, for we have it on high authority that it is she and her brother who are represented, thus engaged, in a curious miniature preserved at the Bibliothèque Nationale in Paris. In this design executed by an unknown artist, only the back of Frances is to be seen, but a full view of Margaret is supplied, the personage standing behind her being Artescoffier, her own and her brother's governor. Whatever time Margaret may have devoted to diversion, she was certainly a very studious child, for at 15 years of age she already had the reputation of being highly accomplished. Shortly after her 16th birthday, a great change took place in her life. On August 3, 1508, Louise of Savoy records in her journal that Francis this day quitted Amboise to become a courtier, and left me all alone. Margaret accompanied her brother upon his entry into the world, the young couple repairing to Blois, where Louis XII had fixed his residence. There had previously been some unsuccessful negotiations in view of marrying Margaret to Prince Henry of England, Henry VIII, and at this period another husband was suggested in the person of Charles of Austria, Count of Flanders, and subsequently Emperor Charles V. Louis XII, however, had other views as regards the daughter of the Count of Angoulême, for he knew that if he himself died without male issue, the throne would pass to Margaret's brother. Hence he decided to marry her to a prince of the royal house, Charles, Duke of Alençon. This prince, born at Alençon on September 2, 1489, had been brought up at the Château of Mauves, in Le Perquet, by his mother, the pious and charitable Margaret of Lorraine, who on losing her husband had resolved, like Louise of Savoy, to devote herself to the education of her children. It had originally been intended that her son Charles should marry Susan, daughter of the Duke and Duchess of Bourbon, the celebrated Peter and Anne de Beaujeu, but this match fell through owing to the death of Peter and the opposition of Anne, who preferred the young Count of Montpensier, afterwards Constable to Bourbon, as a son-in-law. A yet higher alliance then presented itself for Charles. It was proposed that he should marry Anne of Brittany, the widow of King Charles VIII, but she was many years his senior, and, moreover, to prevent the separation of Brittany from France, it had been stipulated that she should marry either her first husband's successor, Louis XII, or the heir presumptive to the throne. Either course seemed impracticable, as the heir, Francis of Angoulême, was but a child, while the new king was already married to Jane, a daughter of Louis XI. Brittany seemed lost to France, when Louis XII, by promising the Duchy of Valentinois to Caesar Borgia, prevailed upon Pope Alexander VI to divorce him from his wife. He then married Anne of Brittany, while Charles of Alençon proceeded to perfect his knightly education, pending other matrimonial arrangements. In 1507, when in his 18th year, he accompanied the army which the king led against the Genoese, and conducted himself bravely, displaying such courage, indeed, at the Battle of Agnadel, gained over the Venetians who were assailed after the submission of Genoa, that Louis XII bestowed upon him the Order of St. Michael. It was during this Italian expedition that his mother negotiated his marriage with Margaret of Angoulême. The alliance was openly countenanced by Louis XII, and the young Duke of Valois, as Francis of Angoulême was now called, readily acceded to it. Margaret brought with her a dowry of 60,000 livres, payable in 4 installments, and Charles, who was on the point of attaining his 21st year, was declared a major and placed in possession of his estates. The marriage was solemnized at Blois in October 1509. Margaret did not find in her husband a mind comparable to her own. Differences of taste and temper brought about a certain amount of coolness, which did not, however, hinder the Duchess from fulfilling the duties of a faithful, submissive wife. In fact, although but little sympathy would appear to have existed between the Duke and Duchess of Alençon, their domestic differences have at least been singularly exaggerated. During the first 5 years of her married life, Margaret lived in somewhat retired style in her Duchy of Alençon, while her husband took part in various expeditions, and was invested with important functions. In 1513 he fought in Picardy against the English and Imperialists, commanded by Henry VIII, being present at the famous Battle of Spurs, and early in 1514 he was appointed Lieutenant General and Governor of Brittany. Margaret at this period was not only often separated from her husband, but she also saw little of her mother, who had retired to her Duchy of Angoulême. Louise of Savoy, as mother of the heir presumptive, was the object of the homage of all adroit and politic courtiers, but she had to behave with circumspection on account of the jealousy of the Queen, and of Brittany, whose daughters, Claude and Renee, were debarred by the Salic law from inheriting the crown. Louis XII wished to marry Claude to Francis of Angoulême, but Anne refusing her consent, it was only after her death, in 1514, that the marriage was solemnized. It now seemed certain that Francis would in due course ascend the throne, but Louis XII abruptly contracted a third alliance, marrying Mary of England, the sister of Henry VIII. Louise of Savoy soon deemed it prudent to keep a watch on the conduct of this gay young queen, and took up her residence at the court in November 1514. Shortly afterwards Louis XII died of exhaustion, as many had foreseen, and the hopes of the Duchess of Angoulême were realized. She knew the full extent of her empire over her son, now Francis I, and felt both able and ready to exercise a like authority over the affairs of his kingdom. The accession of Francis gave a more important position to Margaret and her husband. The latter was already one of the leading personages of the state, and new favors increased his power. He did not address the king as "Your Majesty," says O'Donnell Desnoy, but styled him "Monseigneur" or "My Lord," and all the acts which he issued respecting his Duchy of Alençon began with the preamble, "Charles, by the grace of God." Francis had scarcely become king than he turned his eyes upon Italy, and appointing his mother as regent, he set out with a large army, a portion of which was commanded by the Duke of Alençon. At the Battle of Marignano the troops of the latter formed the rearguard, and, on perceiving that the Swiss were preparing to surround the bulk of the French army, Charles marched against them, overthrew them, and by his skillful maneuvers decided the issue of the second day's fight. The conquest of the Duchy of Milan was the result of this victory, and peace supervening, the Duke of Alençon returned to France. It was at this period that Margaret began to keep a court, which, according to O'Donnell Desnoy, rivaled that of her brother. We know that in 1517 she and her husband entertained the king with a series of magnificent fêtes at their Château of Alençon, which then combined both a palace and a fortress. But little of the château now remains, as, after the damage done to it during the religious wars between 1561 and 1572, it was partially demolished by Henry IV. When he and Brome captured it in 1590. Still the lofty keep built by Henry I. of England subsisted intact till in 1715 it was damaged by fire, and finally in 1787 razed to the ground. The old pile was yet in all its splendor in 1517, when Francis I was entertained there with jousts and tournaments. At these gay gatherings Margaret appeared apparelled in keeping with her brother's love of display, for, like all princesses, she clothed herself on important occasions in sumptuous garments. But in everyday life she was very simple, despising the vulgar plan of impressing the crowd by magnificence and splendor. In a portrait executed about this period, her dark-colored dress is surmounted by a wimple with a double collar and her head covered with a cap in the Bernese style. This portrait tends, like those of a later date, to the belief that Margaret's beauty, so celebrated by the poets of her time, consisted mainly in the nobility of her bearing and the sweetness and liveliness spread over her features. Her eyes, nose, and mouth were very large, but although she had been violently attacked with smallpox while still young, she had been spared the traces which this cruel illness so often left in those days, and she even preserved the freshness of her complexion until late in life. Like her brother, whom she greatly resembled, she was very tall. Her gait was solemn, but the dignified air of her person was tempered by extreme affability and a lively humor, which never left her. Francis I did not allow the magnificent reception accorded to him at Alençon to pass unrewarded. He presented his sister with the Duchy of Berry, where she henceforward exercised temporal control, though she does not appear to have ever resided there for any length of time. In 1521, when her husband started to the relief of Chevalier Bayard, attacked in Mezières by the imperial troops, she repaired to Meaux with her mother so as to be near to the Duke. Whilst sojourning there she improved her acquaintance with the bishop, William Brissonnet, who had gathered around him Gerard Roussel, Michael Darant, Lefebvre de Tapla, and other celebrated disciples of the Reformation. The effect of Luther's preaching had scarcely reached France before Margaret had begun to manifest great interest in the movement, and had engaged in a long correspondence with Brissonnet, which is still extant. Historians are at variance as to whether Margaret ever really contemplated a change of religion, or whether the protection she extended to the reformers was simply dictated by a natural feeling of compassion and a horror of persecution. It has been contended that she really meditated a change of faith, and even attempted to convert her mother and brother, and this view is borne out by some passages in the letters which she wrote to Bishop Bersonnet after spending the winter of 1521 at Meaux. Whilst she was sojourning there, her husband, having contributed to the relief of Mézières, joined the king, who was then encamped at Fervax on the Somme, and preparing to invade Hainaut. It was at this juncture that Clement Marot, the poet, who, after being attached to the person of Anne of Brittany, had become a hanger-on at the court of Francis I, applied to Margaret to take him into her service. Shortly afterwards we find him furnishing her with information respecting the royal army, which had entered Hainaut and was fighting there. Langlet du Fresnoy, in his edition of Marot's works, originated the theory that the numerous poems composed by Marot in honor of Margaret supply proofs of an amorous intrigue between the pair. Other authorities have endorsed this view, but M. La Rudolincy asserts that in the pieces referred to, and others in which Marot incidentally speaks of Margaret, he can find no trace either of the fancy ascribed to her for the poet or of the passion which the latter may have felt for her. Like all those who surrounded the Duchess of Alençon, Marot, he remarks, exalted her beauty, art, and talent to the clouds, but whenever it is to her that his verses are directly addressed, he does not depart from the respect he owes to her. To give some likelihood to his conjectures, Langlet du Fresnoy had to suppose that Marot addressed Margaret in certain verses which were not intended for her. In the epistles previously mentioned, and in several short pieces, rondeaux, epigrams, New Year's addresses, and epitaphs really written to or for the sister of Francis I, one only finds respectful praise, such as the humble courtier may fittingly offer to his patroness. There is nothing whatever, adds M. La Rudolincy, to promote the suspicion that a passion, either unfortunate or favored, inspired a single one of these compositions. The campaign in which Francis I was engaged at the time when Marot's connection with Margaret began, and concerning which the poet supplied her with information, was destined to influence the whole reign, since it furnished the occasion of the first open quarrel between Francis I and the companion of his childhood, Charles de Bourbon, Count of Montpensier, and Constable of France. Yielding too readily on this occasion to the persuasions of his mother, Francis entrusted to Margaret's husband the command of the vanguard, a post which the constable considered his own by virtue of his office. He felt mortally offended at the preference given to the Duke of Alençon, and from that day forward he and Francis were enemies forever. Whilst the king was secretly jealous of Bourbon, who was one of the handsomest, richest, and bravest men in the kingdom, Louise of Savoy, although 44 years of age, was in love with him. The constable, then 32, had lost his wife, Susan de Bourbon, from whom he had inherited vast possessions. To these Louise of Savoy, finding her passion disregarded, laid claim, as being a nearer relative of the deceased. A marriage, as Chancellor Duprat suggested, would have served to reconcile the parties, but the constable having rejected the proposed alliance with disdain, so it is said the suit was brought before the Parliament and decided in favor of Louise. Such satisfaction as she may have felt was not, however, of long duration, for Charles de Bourbon left France, entered the service of Charles V, and in the following year, 1524, helped to drive the French under Bonnivet out of Italy. 2. Underscore the regency of Louise of Savoy. Margaret and the royal children. The defeat of Pavia and the death of the Duke of Alençon. The royal trinity. All is lost save honor. Margaret's journey to Spain and her negotiations with Charles V. Her departure from Madrid. The scheme to arrest her, and her flight on horseback. Liberation of Francis I. Clever escape of Henry of Navarre from prison. Margaret's secret fancy for him. Her personal appearance at this period. Marriage of Henry and Margaret at Saint Germain. Underscore. The most memorable events of Margaret's public life date from this period. Francis, who was determined to reconquer the Milanese, at once made preparations for a new campaign. Louise of Savoy was again appointed regent of the kingdom, and as Francis's wife, Claude, was dying of consumption, the royal children were confided to the care of Margaret, whose husband accompanied the army. Louise of Savoy at first repaired to Lyons with her children, in order to be nearer to Italy, but she and Margaret soon returned to Blois, where the queen was dying. Before the royal army had reached Milan, Claude expired, and soon afterwards Louise was incapacitated by a violent attack of gout, while the children of Francis also fell ill. The little ones, of whom Margaret had charge, consisted of three boys and three girls, the former being Francis, the Dauphin, who died in 1536, Charles, Duke of Orleans, who died in 1545, and Henry, Count of Angoulême, who succeeded his father on the throne. The girls comprised Madeleine, afterwards the wife of James V. of Scotland, Margaret, subsequently Duchess of Savoy, and the Princess Charlotte. The latter was particularly beloved by her aunt Margaret, who subsequently dedicated to her memory her poem underscore Le Miroir de Lampechiresse underscore. While the other children recovered from their illness, little Charlotte, as Margaret records in her letters to Bishop Brissonnet, was seized with so grievous a malady of fever and flux, that after a month's suffering she expired, to the deep grief of her aunt, who throughout her illness had scarcely left her side. This affliction was but the beginning of Margaret's troubles. Soon afterwards the Constable de Bourbon, in conjunction with Pescara and Lenoir, avenged his grievances under the walls of Pavia. On this occasion, as at Marignano, the Duke of Alençon commanded the French reserves, and had charge of the fortified camp from which Francis, listening to Bonnivet, sallied forth, despite the advice of his best officers. The king bore himself bravely, but he was badly wounded and forced to surrender, after La Palissa, Lescun, Bonnivet